include that as commentary either to section one or section five of the arson draft.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and I'm sure George Platt can help us on this, and I don't know what Don's thoughts are. Again, we come back to these basic policy decisions that we have to make, and I'm not sure that so far we have formulated any hard and fast policy decisions with respect to commentary. I think we have all felt that we need a commentary. Now, I don't know exactly what form it's going to take.
We discussed that at considerable length this morning, John. And while we don't know the precise form that commentary will make, will be, we do know this, that the commentary to each one of these, the final commentary, will be available in such form. Now, they'll probably be in the annotated portion of the code. George discussed that. But in any event, wherever they are, they will be in the position so that they are immediately available to the courts and the attorneys. In the same way, for example, that the Uniform Commercial Code of the Illinois or the other side.
Now, when we speak in this context with respect to commentary, we're talking about this sort of thing, the commentary that you have pending, motion you have pending, as opposed to the commentary that it follows the drafts. Is this correct?
Well, it wouldn't displace all of the commentary, but I think just be added to it, essentially.
To arson in the first degree, section 5.
Probably remain for a later date for us or someone to pare down the existing commentary. And in that, whatever that is done, this certainly would be a part of it to aid.
Yes.
I'm not at all sure that ultimately you might not end up with this in
addition.
Possibly in section 1. I just don't know, but it seems to me that could be that. Could be left up to the Don to
drafting
them. The policy, I think the policy thrust of this is clear. I don't know if everybody will agree with it, but at least it provides reasonably definite guideline or explanation, I think, for juries, judges, lawyers, and others. And what you mean by customarily occupied, and leaves it up to prior to fact in any given case. And it doesn't impose a burden on the defendant, it doesn't clutter up the section with an affirmative defense, and perhaps has other merits as well, although I can't think of them at the moment.
I think this is a decision whether to put it in the commentary or to put it in the statute change, you know, plan to codify, you know, definition of whether it's this or something else. It's a decision we've got to make whether we want this to be followed or whether we would like it to be followed. And if we would like it to be followed, we can put it in the commentary. If we want it to be followed, go ahead and put it in the statute.
Well, the language here is such that, in fact, the Illinois Supreme Court, you can interpret this other than we have. Here's what we intended.
Yeah, this is what we would like it to say.
Well, I can't conceive of a circuit judge in light of this not observing it. Assuming that when this goes through the legislature that the same thing occurs.
Well, there would certainly be a strong argument that it should be followed.
When it comes to drawing and instruction, for example, which is where the fight of the line will come, or in ruling on a motion for direct verdict, what what is he going to do? Isn't he going to say, well, this is what they meant, this is what they're meant to mean?
Yeah.
And so that's what we'll do. Suppose he could say, well, no, I'm going to plump up my own definition of customarily occupied. But to do that, why, presumably the Supreme Court is straight now.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it was the intention of the subcommittee to broaden the definition because we felt that that we should. And I certainly find nothing at all objectionable to this definition. I think it helps clarify it. I'll vote for it. In a way, I have some grave reservations about this kindness thing, because I think that we should try to say as clearly and precisely what we mean in as few words as we possibly can and leave it at that. But as you know, this is a terribly, terribly difficult section, and the subcommittee was not unmindful of the problems because we spent so much time on it.
Well, the commission certainly is mindful of it, too. We replowed the same ground and attempted today, where you can see part of it's on the board, of doing something that we could place in the statute itself. But we finally concluded that the same result would be achieved by approaching it in this manner. And I think that we will. Is there any further discussion? I think Frank wanted, instead of reasonably probable, the fact of occupancy is a reasonable possibility. And I have no feeling one way or another personally about it. I don't think it's going to make a great deal of difference, Frank.
No, it doesn't make a great deal of difference, but it does. I think the word possible there does carry through more what at least what I felt the subcommittee strategy was of putting the burden on the defendant to make certain that there was nobody in the building. And as a practical matter, as far as a jury, whether they get it possible or probable, may make little difference. But
I like probably better than
possible. In light of the judgment of equivalency.
Is there some difference insofar as the defendant is concerned in proving probability and possibility?
He doesn't have proof. It's up to state to prove it. Mm-hmm. At least, I should say this has been where we arrived at, because we started in this morning imposing the burden on the defendant, and I got run out of the ballpark on that one. Somewhat willingly, I might add.
No, the fact of occupancy is a reasonable possibility. Be the language as against this.
It's just kind of a matter of degree.
Well, the test and degree are the circumstances at the time that create a reasonable possibility that the person is present.
Yeah, we had been using reasonable possibility up until.
Well, when he worded it this way, that the defendant with the non-occupancy would have to be reasonably probable, but really the reverse, that occupancy should be possible, not probable.
Well, occupancy in a barn is reasonably possible, but not reasonably probable.
Well, it depends on the circumstances.
Yeah,
occupancy of a camper, let us say, at given places. The circumstances may be such that under those particular circumstances, it's probable that it would be occupied. or other circumstances might be that it's improbable for you to be arguing. Or
possible, but somebody might have perched up in the belfry of the First Baptist Church last night and be sleeping up there. That isn't probable.
Well, it has to be a reasonable possibility. There's a reasonable possibility that the camper is occupied under those given circumstances. Then, zingo, he's first degree.
Well, like the large office building, it might be, might not be probable that there would be custodial staff working at 2 o'clock, but it's a definite possibility.
Well, those are words of counsel. Is going to utilize in arguing to the jury. I don't think that the ordinary juror is going to make a great deal of, draw a great distinction between the two of them.
Question?
But as I say, I don't.
Well, Mr. Chairman, so it's clear, I'll move that we adopt this under the, using the term reasonable possibility as opposed to reasonable probability.
Do you second join in myself on it?
I'll read it.
A building, not the whole thing. You don't want me to read the whole thing, do you? Or excuse me. A building, thing, or structure is customarily occupied by people for purposes of the arson section if A, by reason of circumstances of time and place when the fire or explosion occurs, people then and there are normally in the building, structure, or thing, or B, circumstances are such as to make the fact.
Bob, do you want to vote on this?
My vote, well, this is the arson. My vote is non-concur on the modification. I prefer the New York.
Your vote is no.
My vote is no, yes.
Circumstances are such as to make the fact of occupancy by persons then and there a reasonable possibility. That's the proposal.
Read that last.
Circumstances. In other words, it would be customarily occupied under either one or two sets of circumstances. The first set of circumstances would be when the fire or explosion occurs, people are normally in the building. And the second would be the circumstances are such as to make the fact of occupancy by persons, a reasonable possibility.
Possibility.
Mm-hmm. A reasonable possibility.
If anything, it gives the defendant a little better shape. I mean the state. Any further discussion? Call the roll.
Call the roll.
Just look around the table.
Point of personal privilege.
Yes.
We are now voting on adopting the commentary.
Yes.
Have we already voted on adopting the definition?
This is on both of them.
Both.
This would apply to both.
The motion is to adopt or approve section 5 with at least this commentary included.
Oh, I thought this commentary would be appropriate to.
Well, we suggested that it
section
one. It might ultimately end up in section
it
one.
It might, yeah, with that understanding.
Yeah.
All right. Judge Burns?
Aye.
Senator Burns?
Aye.
Hart?
Aye.
Knight?
Aye.
Mahoney?
No.
Thornton votes no, and Mr. Chairman.
Aye. Now, how many do you have?
We have 5 ayes and 2 noes.
Well, the
Chandler votes aye.
Chandler votes aye. That still isn't. Yeah.
I guess the
motion's carried. Let's go on to section. The next section, quick, before we talk.
You want to make a deal, somebody? I'm in a good position.
Just with one vote, I'll feel too secure.
Having voted with the prevailing side, I may move to reconsider.
Well, it's possible that we will. Would you come to section four, Senator Burns?
Well, this is second degree arson. A person commits a crime of arson in second degree if, by starting a fire or causing an explosion, he intentionally damages any building of another that is not protected property as defined by, or as defined in section one. And this is designed to reach the barn, the woodshed, non-occupied building. We've been over this mostly, I think. Just want to draw your attention to the to the fact that this is similar to second degree arson as we now have it in the Oregon Code. And that's what it's designed at, designed to reach. The commentary is useful on this point, but I have nothing further.
I'd like to ask a question. Second degree arson would be limited to any building which does not qualify as under first degree.
Correct.
Now,
and with the element of intentional burning, this is very important, shouldn't be overlooked.
Now, do you provide coverage somewhere in this code for intentional burning of structure or thing?
A thing as such, no. And our feeling was that this type of damage, even though it might be committed by use of fire, it would be adequately covered under criminal mischief. And that we didn't need to make this arson get into some of the less.
Well, we've been talking about campers, boats, and airplanes, and so on.
Well, cars.
Cars, and campers, and boats. I take it that you're not, other than insofar as they might fall under Section 5, you're not covering them.
No. We felt that those would be adequately covered under criminal mischief.
Do we create any problem by using the term structure in the definition, and then using the term building in second degree arson? In other words, are we going to get into a situation where the argument will be this is a structure as opposed to a building? I don't know. When you say structure, place, or thing in the original definition, it calls to my mind the notion that you mean buildings, but a lot of other things that
would have people in them.
And then here you use building alone without any further definition. I don't know.
Because we didn't want to make it arson to burn a thing unless there were some other consideration involved, such as the danger to human life or some protected property involved. And that, as a matter of fact, our first draft of arson didn't even cover this. Didn't even cover a building unless it was tied in with the danger to a person or danger to some other type of property that...
But if I burn your car or your camper and it doesn't fall within Section 5, you still got a catch-all provision in criminal mischief.
Criminal mischief, yes.
Now, I take it then it's going to be arson in the second degree, undoubtedly will be a felony. But, so burning a shed, say, that is, if it classifies as a building, and I assume that it would.
Well, it's just destruction of personal property.
Would be a felony, whereas where in the criminal mischief category is, like, burning a car, fall? I mean, does it fall further down the misdemeanor stage, or?
It's an indictable misdemeanor.
It's an indictable misdemeanor.
You mean in the new code?
Yeah, in the new
code. Well, we don't know yet. I don't know how those are going to be graded. The commission could decide to grade all of criminal mischief as a misdemeanor, see, or maybe just make the highest form of criminal mischief. May I just digress here, Matt? These gentlemen here, Tony, are from the Oregon Investigators Association, and they were invited to come up tonight here and say,
who is the spokesman for your group?
He is.
I'm Larson, the president of the Oregon State Investigators Association, and we asked permission if we could just sit in as these viewers of your committee.
Would you introduce the rest of your illustrious members?
Well, there may be a couple more along. Ralph Chesmore of the Welfare Recovery Division, Portland, Walt Carrillo of the same, and I'm with the Welfare Fraud Investigation Unit. Rich Cornthwaite and Roland Clark, also the Fraud Investigation Unit, John Arden, WRD, and Portland.
Well, we're very happy to have you here, gentlemen. We hope
thank you for the permission to come.
Enjoy our discussion.
They furnished me with an excellent lunch today, too.
Did they?
That's why you were late.
Don, to comment on Frank's question, the intentional burning of a car didn't rise to the dignity of first degree because of our definition. Would fall under the malicious destruction or our new title of criminal mischief statute. But if the state couldn't prove that it was intentionally burned, then, and I would think in any instance, the state would be entitled to put in to seek a lesser included instruction for reckless burning under Section 3 of this arson draft. I was reading the minutes this morning.
Well, John, the Section 3 in second degree is confined to a building, and the reckless burning includes personal as well as real property.
Right. But a car would be...
Car, yes.
...property.
Any personal property.
Right. So I wanted to make that clear, and we didn't discuss this in the minutes, although we had... a big, long discussion about whether there was a Kirby problem as far as making the criminal mischief statute applicable to fire cases.
Well, this is what I'm wondering about. Do you see any problem in the included offenses
of a different
going clear from criminal mischief to... the arson section, and also it might be the reckless burning may end up penalty-wise being the same as the criminal mischief one that he might be charged with. And of course, we really don't know on that as to where
they're going to fit under the grading structure. Huh?
Mm-hmm. But there is the authority on the larceny of an automobile that plain out now. Larceny, if you allege larceny of an automobile, that taking and using can be a lesser included offense. Of course, you know, it wouldn't be a lesser included offense when stealing a refrigerator or something. But
you get some argument from some lawyers as to whether taking and using is a lesser included offense.
Well, the Supreme Court has said it is. It went to the Supreme Court. Yeah, this came out in about 65 sometime.
See, in the Michigan Code, as we point out on page 5 of the minutes of July 13th, Mr. Chairman, personal property is not covered by arson unless it is a vehicle or watercraft used or overnight lodging, or for the conduct of business. Burning of other personal property is one form of criminal mischief now covered in the criminal mischief section. So, in order to make the record clear with respect to the legislative history, maybe I misspoke myself with respect to burning of personal property falling under reckless burning. we should clear that up. Earlier, in response to Frank Knight's question, I said that the reckless burning of a car could fall under reckless burning in the arson section. And then going back over our minutes where you recited from the Michigan commentary, the personal property wasn't covered under arson unless it was a boat or vehicle adapted for overnight accommodation. Maybe I misspoke.
Well, you see, that was at an earlier stage when we were talking about different definitions of it, too.
Or would you agree then that reckless burning of personal property would fall within the arson section here? We're one section ahead of ourselves.
It would fall within reckless burning under our definition because you just provide the recklessly damaged property of another, which would include personal property.
Okay. All right. Well, Mr. Chairman, then I guess the point where we are is Mr. Collette has answered Judge Burns' question with respect to the fact that second-degree arson relates only to buildings. And we probably should see what the commission feels with regard to that. Or
I'd certainly like to speak on this. On this, on arson in the second degree. Now, under our earlier drafts, this type of burning of a building where there's no other consideration involved would not have been arson. And I personally think there's a lot of merit in the rationale that says that it's not arson simply because you burn a building, because you get into these weird situations, such as your question a while ago, you burn a chicken house or you burn a barn or something where there's no other consideration involved, and the mere fact that it happens to be a quote building unquote makes it arson. And it seems to me that unless there is some element of danger to the person of another or danger to protected property within our definition, that I think that we're departing from our basic rationale. And this was my position when this was in the subcommittee.
When you say
I think we're departing from our basic rationale to call this arson.
Include scorching in your first part. Call that damn.
Yes. I mean, under scorching now is burning.
I know.
So this would be, and we felt that damage would include scorching, yes.
But we don't know about the grading yet or anything, but is it worse to build, to burn down an old, abandoned outhouse than it is to burn a new 1968 Imperial or somebody?
Well, I think not.
Depends whether it's in Valley or County or Multnomah County.
Is the Imperial similarly equipped?
No. Well, what was your point, Don?
Well, my point is that we're saying that a man commits arson because he burns a building. Now, every place else in this article on arson, we've tied punishment in. Of course, we're talking about first degree. But we've tied it in with endangering the life of another or endangering or actually damaging protected property, a certain character of property, which includes public buildings and forest lands. And there's good public policy argument for calling that kind of a crime arson. But here we're calling arson because number one, fire or an explosion is used, and secondly, because it's a building. These kind of statutes have come under a lot of criticism, and I think the direction of the model penal code in all the states here recently has been to get away from this artificial characterization of a burning of a building as arson, unless there's something else connected with it. And I don't think that the mere fact that you burn down a building in and of itself should amount to the crime of arson, whether you call it second degree or not. But you're still labeling somebody as an arsonist. And I think if you have provisions in the criminal code to deal with this conduct, that you can deal with it, because it's usually going to be a less serious type of thing, I would think. And here, if it's a building, you're into arson in the second degree.
Well, New York. What would you call it, rather than have it in section 4 be the intentional burning, and then section 3 reckless burning, and section 2 unlawful use of fire?
You're speaking against section 4.
I am. I'm speaking against it. Yes.
Well then, unless you have section 4, how do you provide for a lesser included crime of arson, where you have a situation where the indictment charges the man
with the burning of a building customarily occupied by people, and the proof doesn't show it, and the judge takes away first degree arson before he sends the case to the jury? He isn't going to send the case, he's not going to allow the DA to amend his indictment. And at that point, and charge him with malicious mischief, is he?
Well, actually, I noticed here on July 13, Justice Sloan asked Mrs. Beaufay if it would be possible to include in the criminal mischief statutes an exception clause to say that any offense included in the arson sections was not applicable under the criminal mischief section. Ms. Beaufay replied that it would be possible to draft such an exception. So this must have been discussed before.
Mr. Chairman, to ask Don a question. Don, is section 3 reckless burning, is that comparable legislation?
Yes, there's...
Right, now let me put a question to you. Suppose I recklessly drive my car into another automobile and it caused an explosion. Where is the cause? Would this section come?
Through reckless?
Yeah, suppose I'm reckless. I don't mean negligence. Suppose I'm reckless. How the definition is applied to the use of an automobile. I damage the property of another by fire or explosion. Isn't that covered? Not what you're in the money.
No, it isn't.
What?
I would say it'd be a serious question whether it be covered, because
I think you make a good argument that it would be under this language, but it's certainly not the intent of this section to cover that kind of situation. You see, we first started off with language when we were talking about reckless damage. Provided that you had to nonetheless have an intentional starting of the fire. And the subcommittee didn't feel that you should have words like recklessly and intentionally in the same section. And so the decision was made to take out the intentionally and just leave it in recklessly. Originally, this was intended to cover, and I think if you look at these comparable codes, that you'll see that they're talking about reckless damage, but nonetheless an intentional starting of the fire. That's what we had initially set out to provide. But as these sections have been modified, some of these provisions that were in there to begin with are not in here now. But that's another, I think that's, although it's a related question, it's a separate question from this one on arson in the second degree. Now, originally our arson in the second degree was tied in with endangering someone, or endangering this protected property type of thing. Whereas the first degree was tied in with actual damage to property or actual injury. And that was first degree, and then second degree was just the endangering. And as these sections were modified, then the endangering was moved over into first degree, and we dropped the requirement of actual injury or actual damage. So, and then the decision was made that then we would replace what we had previously had as second degree, which would have been the endangering type of offense, with this provision to cover buildings. Now, I think it is a fundamental policy question, and that's why I bring it up. But,
well, where would you go in the hypothetical John, where would you go if you can't cut the mustard on a first degree arson? Where do you slip down the ladder to? Either by way of verdict or what you should make you do it.
Defacing the building, how you know.
Are you going to slip down to reckless burning? Which you could if you had the Michigan or the non-feeding code section, I suppose. Because I think your criticism is well taken, and all the guy does is burn down a worthless shed, you shouldn't call him an arsonist. But on the other hand, if it's a squeaky case and he wiggles off the hook on customarily occupied, it's still a fairly important building and so on, it doesn't seem to me that it's unfair to call that bird an arsonist. Well, I don't think we ought to necessarily be tyrannized by labels.
We could change this to arson in the third degree, and then add another section saying Oregon has no arson in the second degree. Then you could fall into the third degree.
Well, Chairman, to make an observation here, the first two drafts that were considered by the subcommittee had the intentional damage of a building of another, first degree arson. And that scope was all buildings. And we, of course, felt that, and we reached this in the third draft, we felt that buildings that were protected property or of the type where people customarily occupied them should be one step higher than other buildings. But I don't see how we can take care of the lesser included situation unless we have second degree arson. I confess that I'm really not satisfied with anything in this arson section except section 2. And that's because I have a civil case presently pending. And I have been terribly deeply involved in this section, which we've listed out of the present law. But I think we need it.
At least until your case is finished.
That's right. But I just don't see how we can not have a crime arson in second degree.
Where would you go, Don?
Well, I certainly agree that there should be another degree here, some place to go with these. And I would imagine we'd have to restructure the entire article. And I was reluctant to even bring up this, but I do think it is something for us to think about.
Would you tie it to value?
That'd be simply introducing some more distinctions that we supposedly have been trying to get away from. As we were yesterday.
No,
we have values and value provisions, which are elements of criminal mischief. two separate degrees of criminal mischief for tied up with
Don, our second degree arson, section four here, as we drafted it, was intended to be somewhat comparable to third degree arson on the present law, 164.040. No, I mean, section three, right? It was intended to be somewhat comparable to 164.040, except we're taking willful, malicious, and wanton element out and replacing it with reckless, right?
Yeah, although this is
you know, the more I think about it,
the more I wonder
if New York didn't go through the same thing that we've been going through for days, subcommittee and the commission, on this, and finally arrived at first degree arson being a situation where there had to be a person present in that building. And then second degree being in the situations that we're talking about now, where the reasonable possibility and so forth here. And then third degree, because penalties would take care of it in the classification. Third degree, what we have as second degree. See what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Because what difference does it make whether we call it first, second, or third degree if we reach the factual situation that we want in each case?
Of course, I wouldn't, Mr. Chairman, I would not be in favor of the New York statute says that to be first degree arson, there has to be a person in the building.
Yeah, and then the other element.
And that the defendant has to know that,
yeah,
or be reasonably likely to know it.
Yeah.
And it certainly seems to me that there are buildings which you would want to protect enough by making it first degree arson, regardless of whether there was somebody in the building at the time.
Right, but what difference does it make, Jim, if there is someone present at the time who's injured, calling it first degree, and then second degree, where there isn't anyone present, but under the circumstances, he was aware of a reasonable possibility someone might be there, could be there.
Well, but I don't want to burn the whole house. Let's say, take an ordinary dwelling house. And the proof, in fact, shows at trial that at the exact time there was nobody there. So he gets second degree arson.
All right, you'll take care of it by your penalties or otherwise. What difference make whether you call it first or second degree or XYZ? It seems to me that you're attaching too much importance to a title.
Well,
there's nothing about the words first degree.
I agree with you there, but it doesn't seem to me that we ought to where do you go when you have a fire in a house that the trial shows is unoccupied?
Second degree. Just as an example, let's say the penalty was 20 years if someone was in it, and 19 years if someone wasn't in there. That's just using those for illustrative purposes. What difference would it make?
Well, can I make a comment?
Yeah.
I think one of the things that we haven't gotten to yet, but we're going to get to, is going to be as far as uniformity or the grading of offenses and some uniformity with respect to Class A felony, Class B felony, Class C felony. And I would think probably that we'd be trying to make a greater disparity between first degree and second degree arson, and first degree and second degree burglary, and first degree and second degree robbery, than 1 year.
Well, that's true. I just use that to emphasize my by example. Supposing we call them both Class A felons.
Yeah, then you're going to get...
You mean first degree and second degree?
Yeah. I'm not suggesting that, just for purposes of discussion.
Well, but that gets away from what the I'm talking about robbery and everything else, is that we want to discourage people from using the deadly or the dangerous weapon or this type of thing by making it a distinction. And I think that what you're talking about, again, gets away from what the subcommittee thing about, that because of the danger of arson, the danger of a fire, that if there's a possibility that a person could be injured, that it should be in the first degree.
I realize that, but I'm just trying to find an area of mutual agreement.
I suppose they make them both Class A felonies. I suppose there is a... right now we have, it's rape and assault with intent to commit rape are both the maximum possible penalties of 20 years. It's gone to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said that this is all right. Of course, if they're both the same, it kind of makes... kind of ridiculous, the haggling over the whether it's usually occupied then. I mean, you can use the criteria.
Well, that would eliminate that.
Yeah, it use the usually occupied situation would come into the judge in sentencing. It's whether or not he should treat it seriously or not so seriously. But I mean, it'd be useless to you wouldn't want to have a trial over such a thing as that. I mean,
the difference between first or second degree. Well, I'll hand you my note again.
Can I ask one question?
Should we take it back to the second?
No.
Don't take that until we've jumped on you some more.
The thing you brought up, John, was the idea, you know, that you object to calling this second degree arson. Don't you think what really is hanging you up and the rest of us too is this idea of sentences or what class of felony this is going to be? And I want to ask the next question, which is, when do we get to that? And maybe this would help expedite the consideration of these various sections if we got to that rather early in the...
Well, I would think we would get to it within the next 60 days.
Yeah, because I think this is having a bearing on what the thinking is here. Because we're departing from the model penal code idea, you know, class... first degree, second degree, third degree felony, and I think this is reflected in our consideration of the harm we're trying to
consider. I wanted to make this point, that in connection with our first two drafts, you see, we talk about burning a building of another. In drafts 1 and 2, we define building in a different manner. I mean, of course, we're not defining building at all now, but we defined building, it was tied in with overnight accommodation or carrying on business, you see. So it was tied into something other than just the fact that we were building. But you see, when we evolved these drafts and we got away from that concept, we just went through
that. Because of that, I think Judge Burns' initial observation is extremely valid. We talk in terms of protected property being a structure, place, or thing. Put that in first degree, and then we come down here in second degree and talk about building, which hasn't been defined. Building is defined in the Fresno RS, frankly, I would like to, but if it would expedite the work of the commission today with respect to forgery, which I think we probably can get through, I'd be willing to take this back to the subcommittee.
I'd like to revise my estimate. Pardon me for interrupting, but Jeannie's been trying to get a word in here for 10 minutes.
Well, it's not really important, but I thought maybe we could avoid that hang-up on the first and second degree by putting everything in one degree of arson and we left them on a penal code on the bottom of section 2 and put them if arson in the first degree if, and then put in, this would avoid your penalty found and say if there is no person present, you know, then it falls into the class C found like A and C, you know that? And this would this would, then you wouldn't need a second degree of arson. You would just define arson and put in that penalty section, which would give you the higher felony in the case that we've got for arson in first degree now, would drop it to a lower felony if such and such circumstances are not present. Then you've got the lesser case offense in right away, you don't need trouble.
Doesn't that kind of increase the problem? Because you got, if you're going to enhance the penalty on something like that, you're going to have to allege and prove it, like, you know, the occupancy or whatever we're talking about. But how are you going to instruct the jury down if the elements of the offense don't have? I mean, if they're going to come back finding guilty as charged, if they find that it's occupied and just guilty of arson, if it's not occupied,
I don't know. I can see that Professor Platt's mental wheels have been churning here, and I'm interested in your reaction.
Well, my reaction I expressed yesterday is along exactly the same lines that Jimmy's talking about now, and that is the choice of style of drafting the section. And I think that you decided yesterday that you preferred the choice style that you had been going with, that is the first degree, second degree, third degree situation. So you made that policy decision. I prefer the other myself. I think the model penal code essentially was a sound way to do it, but that's a personal choice. And it is apparently you are satisfied with the way that you're approaching it.
Next.
Well, there's objection here to the term arson, and I think arson is something that means something to everybody about as much as any criminal term. I'd like to ask Professor Platt if he prefers to put personal property offenses into the criminal mischief category, or why shouldn't we call that arson if it involves burning? This is something I asked, I think, yesterday. Where does personal property fit in under here? You mentioned it would be handled in the code of crime section and under criminal mischief, I take it.
In code of crime?
Those are in attempts.
Oh, I see, attempts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Criminal mischief is a substantive crime.
Yes. Well, do you think that we still should treat personal property and so on in the criminal mischief?
Yeah, I don't think it belongs in arson.
Why is there anything wrong with calling a firebug an arson? Regardless of what he's
burning. In other words, I thought you made a real good point yesterday about the type of illness, you might call it that, type of person involved, and to be consistent all the way through with the type of criminal activity you're dealing with, I think that criminal mischief means nothing to not a lot of people. I know it's a little bit off of where we're at right now, but it isn't really, if we're going to consider this entire article, the activity in arsonist. And it seems to me that the points that have been brought up about the fact that if you're classifying the burning of any building in second degree, a person might burn up a $500,000 crop of wheat. It would be criminal mischief, I take it. Because it's not a building.
The burning, unlawful use of fire.
Yeah, it'd be down in that category. In other words, we're leaving value completely out of it. And because it's a building, we're putting it in the special category.
It is right now, of course, though.
Mm-hmm. I know.
It's third degree arson now.
Well, I think we're ever concerned about civil rights promotion, so we've got to consider value a little bit.
How many members are there here who are on Subcommittee 1?
There are two.
Two.
Burns and Chandler.
Burns and... Don, well, John, certainly you know the problems and questions that are involved here, and they have been involved. Now, I'd like to ask Don, what do you think about sending this back to the subcommittee? We're making haste slowly here.
Well, I don't object to sending it back to subcommittee, but I would, if it does go back to subcommittee, I'd like to have some policy guidelines from the commission on this.
On what items?
Well,
number one.
Of course, if you agree with the policy that's embodied in second-degree arson, that would take care of it. I take it that if you would send it back, then you probably, there'd be some question about the policy behind arson in second-degree as we've got it drafted. And if so, what position the commission feels we should take with respect to the burning of a building where there are no other considerations involved. Do you feel that it's sound to call it arson, or?
Would it be feasible at all to make a distinguish as long as we seem to somewhere, we say building structure or thing, to make a definition of what we mean by building and what we mean by structure as far as sheds and this type and being structured rather than building, and then put intentionally burning a structure back in some place, the category of reckless burning or something, that if you recklessly damage property rather, or intentionally set fire to a structure.
Arson
I mean, if we amended arson in the second degree by deleting building of another and inserting structure, place, or thing of another, it would take care of the $5,000 car, the $500,000 wheat field, and $10 bicycle.
Of course, that makes it a lot broader than what you would have under the present.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the example that Dale gave is not covered presently, except on the third degree arson.
But as far, Mr. Chairman, as far as the subcommittee is concerned, if we've got some idea of what policy the commission would want embodied in the next draft, I think there's value in sending it back to the subcommittee. If not, then I'm afraid we're going to be much where we are right now, is that we'll have another draft that is going to undoubtedly maybe
policy.
We'll solve some of these problems, but it might create new ones that we're going to have.
Policy in what specific direction?
All right. First of all, I think a basic policy consideration is, do we want to make burning of a building arson? Intentional burning of a building arson because it's a building.
State that again, question.
Well, does the commission want to make it arson in the second degree or in any degree, make it arson if it's the intentional burning of a building, if there's no element of danger or damage to protected property involved?
They're saving, of course, the right of defense that it's the property of that person and does not injure or damage another person's property or person. That would be an affirmative defense.
Well, no, that wasn't, no, I didn't mean that.
Well, it's building of another is the definition of arson.
Yeah, but building is,
you mean any
questions about, at least
yeah.
It's a,
just
like that illustration of somebody wanted to go out and they had an old hen house out in the country. Is that your point? May he burn it without committing a crime?
It would have to be a building of another under this definition that we have now.
Well, you want to qualify it, the building of another, or any building?
No.
Building
of another, that's what we have now. But if you feel that that's sound policy, you would make that arson. That's the basic policy question I'm trying to raise.
Well, I would say yes. I
would
burning of a building should be classified as something in a building of another, some degree of art. Yeah.
All right. Now you've hit right on the point where I think we're hung up. Some degree of arson, you say.
Yeah, well,
if the subcommittee comes in and makes this some degree, we'll have the same discussion all over again. $25 building, completely isolated from everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And a hunter goes and deliberately sets fire to it.
The shed that covers the water pump out by the irrigation thing.
Yeah, anything
right.
Like
that. What seems to me to be a feasible way of doing it is making some type of a definition of building and structure of some sort.
What would you suggest? Here is a $50,000 granary over here and a $25 shed over here. Property of another, uninhabited, no one's ever been in them.
Well, the only way
well, they, should they be the same degree?
I think that right off the bat is a monetary value. That,
164.
I guess maybe it's something that, whether it's a shed or a granary, maybe with the judge you got to take into consideration in sentencing, maybe. Even though it's a 20-year maximum, he can put him on probation for 6 months and send him home if it's the shed.
Well, if that's the situation, this thing's all right the way it is.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
yes.
I think we're creating problems for ourselves because let's just look at the present Oregon law. First degree arson is a felony punishable by not more than 20 years. It falls where you intentionally or willfully, maliciously, and wantonly burn a dwelling house or any building that's part of the curtilage or any public building. Now, a dwelling house under present Oregon law, and this is what we try to get away from, was any building, railroad car, house trailer, houseboat, or other structure, if any part of it has usually been occupied by any person lodging therein. So if you burn a dwelling house or any building attached thereto, or any public building, you're guilty of first degree arson and you got 20 years. Now, second degree arson, which is punishable by 10 years, is for the willful, malicious, or wanton burning of any building or structure of a class or of any building or structure of any class or character except a dwelling house and except a public building, whether the property of himself or another. Now, under the present second degree arson statute, which is a 10-year felony, if you burn anything besides a dwelling house or a public building, you're guilty of secondary arson. This could be the irrigation pump shed, it could be the hamburger shed, or it could be a very expensive building that doesn't fall within the dwelling house or public building categories. The point is, we're speculating now by saying that if we adopt second-degree arson, we're going to create all kinds of problems for the DAs and the judges and everything. And I can't say from my own experience that these problems have existed here before. The second-degree arson statute that the subcommittee drafted here is, for all intents and purposes, just the same as the second-degree arson statute we have on the books now. I can't see, really, how we can depart from calling the burning of a building arson. And I feel very, very strongly that, and Don and I respectfully disagree on this, I think we create problems for ourselves when we say, well, the burning of this should be not arson, but malicious mischief. So I think we should try to keep it within burning within arson if we can.
Donnie, the simply stated, Senator Burns had said that you do not have a vote, and the objection you expressed at Section 2 is not completely acceptable.
Well, I feel I have a responsibility, Mr. Chairman.
Don, I had two votes today, remember.
No, and I certainly agree with what Senator Burns says about the present law. In fact, the commentary to the first draft pointed out this was one of the things we were trying to change, was to get away from this anomaly of having someone who could be criminally liable for punishment up to 10 years for burning an old shack someplace.
Well, the court could take care of it in sentencing, I think it says. I assume he could.
Chairman, I make another observation.
Yes.
Since we're comparing existing Oregon law with what we might have, I think that you ought to take a much harder look than you have at the amount of penalty that's going to result from these categories you're creating. You know, under the present first degree arson in Oregon, the maximum is 20 years. The first degree category, assuming the model penal code penalty provisions, would actually be, you'd actually increase the penalty for the crime. It would be a life imprisonment as a maximum under the 33rd degree felony under the model penal code. Now, I also want to point out that the model penal code does not see arson as a first degree felony. Its categories are the most penalty is second and third degree, which means the maximum, even where a person is threatened, even if actually in the building, is not less than one and more than three is a minimum, and a maximum of 10 years. The most severe crime of arson then is penalty is 10 years, and I submit that is a pretty good idea to lower that. Now, the reaction some of you may have is, well, this is a terrible thing. A burning building is going to result in death. Well, that's taken care of. We have the felony homicide, the felony murder charge would apply clearly in that case, and with a maximum imprisonment of life, which is the ultimate that can be imposed. So I suggest that you might be increasing unnecessarily penalties when the newer studies and the newer trend in penology indicates that the longer the sentence, the less effective it is.
In commenting on that commentary, it is my hope that this commission will eventually submit a bill for an indeterminate sentence coupled with a full-time parole board. And I think that should be taken into consideration with your comment. Although I agree with you, much of what you say. I remember one time, for instance, I think my first session down here, I remember the case of a chap out of the pen for doing 20 years for issuing a rubber check. The law statute at that time provided on the second conviction for issuing a check under that statute, under that section, there was a mandatory sentence of 20 years. It's true that the district attorney generally disregarded it. If that was the law that I was doing 20 years, I presented a matter of the parole board after he'd done about 4 hours. And he was released. And the chap who actually had written the check, his first offense was doing 1 year. So I agree with you about severe penalties. I think it all fits in or should fit into the idea of the undetermined sentence on a full-time parole.
Yes.
Chairman, I would like to point out, at least as far as my county is concerned, thinking back on while I've been there, there's not only a problem of danger to life in this particular crime, but we had one fire and we were unable to prove who caused that fire, but that one fire caused more monetary damage than I would say all the other crimes put together in the 4 years I've been in the county. So I think your danger of great monetary loss is much greater in this type of crime also.
Well, of course, the long sentence doesn't put any money back in the
place of the pills. Well, of course, this is related to the sentence. That's something that we haven't come to yet, and I'm sure that when we do, that we'll bear in mind this entire situation with respect to this. But we can't terminate consideration of this and start the sentencing matters, because that has been decided and we're well on our way with the substantive crime itself. But it is something, of course, that not only should, but will be considered very, very thoroughly when we come to that, because we've discussed it sporadically at times already. But it seems to me, the more we discuss this, that perhaps we're closer to agreement than we thought. Maybe this section of second degree is all right.
Chairman, if I may raise one more thing that that should be discussed. George Platt has mentioned the penal code. I'm not adverse to the model penal code at all as far as its approach is concerned. In fact, there are, I like its definition of an occupied structure as a criteria for the first degree arson. That's another thing. But one thing that your subcommittee discussed at great length and decided not to follow, not to make part of the revised code, was not to make it a part of arson or burning a building for purposes of collecting insurance. Now, we made a policy decision in there that we were not going to include that in the new criminal code. If a person burns down a building for the purpose of collecting insurance money, I mean, model penal code, of course, is first degree arson or the highest degree. Under many, many of the other codes, it's a crime, and it's a specific crime under our present law. We need to have a different statute. We just decided this was a civil matter. We weren't going to make it part of the arson section. Maybe some members of the commission have a different idea. I mentioned now because I just haven't think of it. But we should be all aware of that.
Well, we also...
Yes.
We also, Donald, I think that as far as the fraud element of it was concerned, if he attempted to defraud the insurance company or did in fact defraud the insurance company, that would be covered under theft by deception. That if he did burn his own house down or something, and in so doing, he brought himself into the purview of some of these other sections because he endangered somebody else's property or something or some other person, then it would be covered. But
one insurance fire would be more aggravated than the non-insurance fire. Non-insurance fire usually get someone rather than someone's money. In fact, I think most of the arsons we've dealt with there that I've come across have been arsons to get even with some person. And the only place I really run into a great deal of a significant amount of insurance type arson is in the East, where they deal with mafia or Cosa Nostra people who go into the business almost like they were in a bankruptcy fraud business. It's not really that great a problem here as far as I can see.
Jake, do you agree with the subcommittee's policy with respect to burning for the purpose of collecting insurance?
Yes, I do. Yeah. I mean, I think it's an equally severe crime whether insurance is involved or not.
Well, I thought your policy was not to make it a crime unless it came within the purview of some of the other sections.
Well,
that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
We're not going to make it part of the arson section. If they attempt to collect insurance fraudulently because of fire, there's plenty of area for the
insurance. I think that's, I personally think it's right.
What did we do?
What is your pleasure with respect to Section 2? Is it Section 2? Section 4, I guess.
We still haven't... I don't know whether we're getting ready to move to recommit it or what, but we're going to try to pass it. It seems to me we ought to decide what we want to do as far as building is concerned. If we want to leave it this building, or we want to put something broader.
Is there a definition of building anyplace? Or did you contemplate
not
the definition?
In this section.
This we just contemplated that this would have its ordinary meaning.
Well, I wonder, are we going to get into an argument because we use
building structure thing in one place and then just building here as far as whether or not by just using the term building we mean something more substantial than that.
That's Jim's original question. In answer to that, Frank, it seems to me, in section 5, we have where was that? I guess
it's
up here. Building structure or thing.
In section 1, definition of protected property means any structure.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't say building. It says any structure, place, or thing. Yeah, it's any structure, place, or thing. So we're reading that.
Well, that's what I was trying to say anyway. I don't think you see any conflict. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'd like to call somebody more gas than Cox or Nine, but there's just a little something about section 4 that bothers me. And the last part of it is not, in other words, it applies those to intentionally damage any building or other that is not protected property as defined in section 1. It seems to me like it's just a little more understandable if we would say that it applied in circumstances of intentional burning or intentionally damaging, not covered by section 5. Because just to refer to protected property, I don't think it's as clear as if we refer to the fact that we're covering intentional burning that's not covered by the circumstances set forth in section 5, if I make myself clear. Do it?
No.
Apparently not.
Yeah.
In other words, if you intentionally damage any building of another that is not protected property as defined in section 1, well, section 1 talks about protected property and property of another. Section 5 talks about protected property and any property where it endangers a person.
Well, that would seem quite logical to me just the way it's written. I
can't certainly explain why.
I think it is, Dale. Because in section 1 you're only talking, you're defining protected property as forest land, public buildings, or any structure, place, or thing customarily occupied by people.
Mm-hmm.
And in your section 2, sub 2 of section 5, it doesn't make any difference whether it's a building or a car or what it is. So in the section 4, in second degree arson, since we're talking about building, we have to relate that back to the definition of protected property.
Yes.
That is in section 1.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we pass section 4 out.
Well,
tentative approval.
I'll second.
Without adding discussion, please.
Yeah.
You've heard the motion. Is there any further discussion? I think it's all right.
Question.
All those in favor will say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Did you vote once or twice?
Twice.
Motion is carried.
You can read it.
What's the vote, Mr. Chairman?
The vote is 7-0. Silence is aye. Section.
Sounds like a judiciary.
Section Section 3.
Where we got our work done.
I had another alternative plan. It's too late now, but I'll still mention a little bit.
Go ahead.
Why don't you adopt sight unseen what California's draft will be on this?
Well, I suppose it'd be very simple just to say we'll adopt the grant California Eagle.
I go first.
Oh, we go down to the meeting.
Well, actually, if someone comes up with some brilliant idea in the future here with respect to this whole arson subject, I'll assure you that it'll be reconsidered. So, George, you can get to work.
Well, Your Honor,
Your Honor.
Not yet.
Not yet.
I want to say this. The subcommittee went over this pretty thoroughly, and we spent a lot of time on it, where we know that this section is going to be one of the most fiercely lobbied sections. And when we distribute our tentative drafts, AOI, the Cattlemen, the Farm Bureau, firefighters, and anyone of 15 other groups are going to come in here with suggested amendments and alternatives to the draft that we've submitted. We're going to have hearings. We're going to have to hear these people out. And I feel just almost positive that as a result of these alternatives that they suggest to us, we're going to be able to come up with something that, might be a little bit more satisfactory than what we've got here.
I think you're right. I'm certain that will occur.
Now, Section 3 is the new section that we agreed on for reckless burning. It contemplated, of course, that this would be a misdemeanor. We used the word recklessly, which is a word that's going to have to be defined in the general articles. We intend this section to somewhat parallel present third degree arson, but without the requirements of having proved deliberate, malicious, and wanton. And so, Don, you can explain it better, but it is new in that sense.
Before, John, before Don undertakes to explain this further, could you answer Senator Mahoney's question when he said one card recklessly runs into another, and as a result, an explosion occurs, and the card of which the first car runs is damaged by reason of the explosion. Would that constitute reckless burning?
It's an awful good question, and the answer would depend upon the definition that your subcommittee gives to reckless.
I raised the question of the automobile.
It's a good question.
Suppose I visit your home, and recklessly, I don't mean negatively, burn the furniture with a cigarette or a cigar or what have you. It's your property. I'm reckless, not just negative.
Reckless, right.
And I've entertained people in my home who aren't just negative, just reckless. So we all. Doesn't this cover that?
Yes.
Why isn't that phrase in the same language as Section 4, except for the reckless and intentional distinction? You know, a person commits a crime with reckless burning would be damages if, by starting a fire or causing an explosion, he recklessly damages property or another. Number one, you have fewer problems in terms of lesser included offense. Secondly, wouldn't it would more directly refer to the criminal act of starting a fire.
But it could conceivably still cover the car
system. Starting a fire in that situation, it starts by wrecking his car. I think it's at least a more direct reference to what you're talking about. And I also like it better because since you're going in descending grades and you're thinking of lesser included offenses, it's best that the language is as close as possible from one offense to the other.
May I ask a question? Is it your point that it must be criminal intent?
Your recklessness.
In other words, suppose the person is in a hotel, and I think anybody who smokes in bed, wearing what they're smoking, is going to say rest. Not only negligent, I think they're reckless in the first degree. Are they guilty of arson? They set fire to the place.
It would be guilty under Section 3 if the jury agrees that is reckless.
It might be a color to that. 1941, making them criminal offense.
What's wrong with that?
Well, there are other crimes starting in bed, which
Sorry.
No.
Well, you know, I'm easy. May I say something?
You bet.
In connection with what you say, Jake, you don't have a copy of preliminary draft number one, but that's essentially the language we had in preliminary draft number one is the way you're suggesting now.
Is it changed for a purpose?
We said a person commits a crime of reckless burning if he recklessly damages property of another, and then we had by intentionally starting a fire or causing an explosion. Well, I mean, finished. Now, then we amended that by taking intentionally out, which then may agree if he recklessly damages property of another by starting a fire or causing an explosion. Isn't that pretty close to what you just suggested?
Yeah, it's just transposed.
Yeah, but, and I have to check the minutes to see why exactly we did it, but then the feeling was to eliminate the starting a fire or causing an explosion. No, not that part, but the... Well, yes, to eliminate any part about the starting and just put in there if he damages it by fire or explosion and eliminate it.
Well,
now, I can't
the reason was the field burning situation. This is where we got into that. I'm burning my own property, my own stubble field, and I'm... Well, now, wait a minute. We cover that in section two anyway, don't we?
Well, I think the reason for that would be is that both first degree and second degree arson are defined as intentionally starting a fire. And now arson is maliciously or wantonly, isn't it? Willfully, maliciously, or wantonly. And intentionally, certainly by the definition, we don't have an intentionally definition in our present code, at least that I can find looking at it in a hurry here. So that we've got to have some place somewhere for a guy starting a fire, not intentionally starting a fire, but with his acts and conduct are such that he is, for all practical purposes, intending to start a fire. Reckless burning may be, you may even have a very large structure or something that by his act, he just. So it comes almost to being intentional, but not intentional under the statute, because first degree and second degree arson, he's got to intend to start that fire. And so there's got to be some place for the act of burning that his conduct is so close. I mean, it's not intentional, but it's criminal.
Well, the thing that disturbs us a little bit when we first read this is Tom's example here of one car recklessly running into another and starting a fire, and the fire damages the other car, and you think, well, my heavens, that isn't reckless burning, that's recklessly running into another car. So immediately we think, well, no, it isn't reckless burning, so this can't be right. But why shouldn't it be?
Well,
what's wrong with it?
Yeah, but I mean, that objection could be changed around it. Instead of saying he recklessly damages fire, if he recklessly starts the fire. Of course, I guess he's starting the fire by the accident anyway. So.
But I mean, what injury is done? What harm is done if we say, all right, that is reckless burning? I can't see any, really, after you examine it.
This is something other than, as I said, and I didn't mean it facetiously, if it sounded that way, the answer to his question really depends upon the definition that the subcommittee attaches to the word reckless. Because I think what Senator Mahoney has in mind would be an automobile accident situation where there may be negligence involved, but not recklessness.
Yes, I think you're right. I would respond to Senator Mahoney's example by saying that does not constitute recklessness within the meaning of the Model Penal Code definition. That it is a criminal negligence at that level of the Model Penal Code definition.
And
we got to remember we can't speak in the same terms of civil and criminal negligence.
Yeah,
I agree. I accept that.
If in fact, Senator, that man driving his car is aware that fire may result, and he consciously takes that risk, then he ought to be.
That's my point.
No, I prefer the culpability level to the model penal code.